Off the Ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to bring my country again.
Do it then. What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Hello and welcome to tonight's football show on Off the Ball. Kevin Kilbane here with you until 10 a.m. 10 p.m. should I say. Later in the hour, we'll be chatting to Robbie Savage about the events in Cardiff on Monday as the Republic of Ireland booked their place in the World Cup playoff and the long-suffering Welsh fan secured another tournament out. They've not qualified now for another World Cup, so they're gone again. If you want to get in touch tonight, text us on 53106 or you can tweet us at Off the Ball. But first, in a highly dramatic last couple of days of World Cup qualifiers around the world, Tim Cahill scored two goals to help Australia beat Syria 2-1 after extra time and 3-2 on aggregate to secure another playoff against Honduras. Honduras finished fourth behind Mexico, Costa Rica and Panama in the CONCACAF qualification to set up that playoff against Australia, in turn knocking out the USA, who lost 2-1 away to Trinidad and Tobago and failed to qualify for the World Cup for the first time since 1986. But it's the South American qualifiers we're looking at tonight. Already qualified, Brazil won 3-0 at home to eliminate Copa American champions Chile. Uruguay, Colombia also joined Brazil in securing automatic qualification, while Peru set up another playoff against New Zealand. But the real drama of the night, we all feel, I think anyone watching last night will probably agree, was in Ecuador, where Lionel Messi scored the 44th hat-trick of his career to secure a 3-1 win for Argentina and automatic qualification to Russia next year. We're joined on the line now by South American football correspondent, BBC's football South American correspondent and ESPN's writer Tim Vickery. Tim, how are you doing?
Well, I'm just very, very glad that this is audio and not TV, because I'm very, very bleary-eyed at the moment
after
the last round of the best World Cup qualifying campaign on the planet.
What a night, eh? What a night.
Yeah, and it really, really was. It's always tight, World Cup qualification in South America, because the strength in depth is there. But last night it was really, really tight, with so much at stake, so many teams having so much to play for. Joy for some, heartache for others, and especially joy for fans of Lionel Messi. He's been getting so much stick. There are so many people who dislike him, and I see this on social media, and I fail to understand. For crying out loud, we ain't going to have him forever. Let's sit back and enjoy him. And if you look at this campaign, he missed 8 of the 18 rounds.
Yeah.
And in those 8 games, Argentina only picked up 7 points. They are so utterly and totally dependent on him. And luckily for them, he really came to the party when it was most needed, because going into the game, a draw would not have been good enough for Argentina. You looked at the back three before the start of the game. You looked at the back three that he'd gone with, and you're thinking, well, Mascherano, if they're going to defend deep, and Mascherano is going to be done in the air, and the wide defenders, they don't have the pace to deal with Ecuador's quick wingers, they're going to be in trouble. They were in trouble after 43 seconds. They were a goal down after 43 seconds. So then they've really got to dig deep in those conditions of altitude, where if you're unacclimatized, you don't last the 90 minutes. There isn't any oxygen in the air. You're gasping for breath. You cannot play your normal game. You cannot cover the amount of distance that you do at sea level. And even Antonio Valencia of Ecuador, who didn't play last night, he was suspended. And he's began his career in that city of Quito. He knows it well. And he said, it's really hard for me to go back and play there. So imagine what it is for unacclimatized visitors. So at that point, 43 seconds into the game, Argentina are really, really in trouble. But cometh the hour, cometh the man. And he had two things in last night's game that he hasn't had for a while. Number one was space. And Argentina's recent opponents have just parked the bus and sat in their own half and looked to run the clock down and frustrate. Ecuador came out to play, so there was space there. The other thing he had that he's been missing was a partner. Angel Di Maria wasn't picked wide. In the game last week, I just couldn't understand it at all. He was wide right, cutting in and just making the pitch smaller for the opposition. But last night, Argentina had two wing-backs, and Di Maria with Messi behind the centre forward. So Di Maria and Messi could combine and they could pass. And that's what won Argentina the game. The combination play between them, opening up space there in the Ecuador defence. Some tremendous goals as well. I mean, especially on the second and the third. The second is almost like he's picked it up and just put it in the top corner with his hand. He does it so easily. And the third is one of his little golf chips that Gary Player or Arnold Palmer would be proud of. So he really, really did come to the party. But the hard work for Argentina now is trying to build a side in time for the World Cup that gets the best out of him and isn't quite as dependent on him, because he can't do this every game.
Yeah, I listened to you at the week and you were actually saying that it was quite interesting. You were saying it'd be finally a team in Ecuador that would actually give Argentina the space. But the one thing that was quite notable when you're watching that game last night, Tim, was how bobbly the pitch was, the quality on the pitch, the quality on the surface. And it's only now, it's only then when you see that and you begin to, well, I don't think we all appreciate him, but you do appreciate Lionel Messi with what he did last night. After going behind so early on, as you say there, it was almost as if he just said, look, I need to do this now. This is about me. I have to, I don't know, almost just take this game and go and do it myself. That's the way it felt when you were watching that game last night.
I'm really glad you've picked up on the quality of the pitches, because that's something from a European point of view, I think you'd be very surprised by the state of some of the pitches that are used in South America. They can be very poor, or sometimes the grass can be very long. They can be much slower than pitches in Europe. I mean, the sacrifices that the South American players make to play for their national teams, the European-based ones, are extraordinary. You know, the air miles that they clock up, the time away from their families, the fact that they get slaughtered by their local press when results are disappointing. And they do it and they put themselves on the line time and time and time again. But we were running the risk, I think, had Argentina lost last night and gone out, I think we were running the risk of that being the end of Lionel Messi for Argentina. I'm not sure he's going to go on beyond the World Cup. I think that might be the end. So, let's enjoy this while it lasts, because it's not going to go on forever.
Yeah, a couple of things that you'd said at the weekend as well is about the team themselves. It felt as though they were running in treacle at times when you're watching them, and the huge pressure that's on that side as well. And it was, you could sense it at the end, that real relief. And I mean, obviously you could see the tension had been totally lifted with that third goal once it gone in for Lionel Messi last night. But I just think in general now, it's almost as if now you can put that qualification to bed now and you can fully concentrate. That's the way, I'm sure that must have been the message that was coming out of the camp last night.
Absolutely. Remember, they've got a new coach, the third coach of the campaign, Jorge Sampaoli. Now, he's a revolutionary. You know, there's nothing orthodox about the way he builds his teams. You saw that with Sevilla last season. But he's come in with absolutely no time on the training ground. No time at all. So it's just get out there and go. And in his first couple of games last month, he went with a trident of Messi, Dybala and Icardi of Inter Milan. And I thought it was a silly idea. They don't even know each other. You know, they don't know each other. They've got no relationship whatsoever. You wonder how Messi and Dybala are going to click, especially with no time on the training field. So that idea was abandoned. But now Sampaoli has two things that I think are absolutely vital. He has time. You know, there's some friendlies coming up. He can sit down and plan his side. Mm. And he has tranquility. They're over the line now. There's no prizes for coming first in qualification. No, there's no prizes for that. All you want to do is get over the line. Argentina have got over the line. So all of that nervousness, that's gone now. So they can build with time and tranquility. And I expect an Argentina much better in the World Cup than the side that we've seen in qualification. Although you do wonder, from the way that Sampaoli wants to play, he usually wants to play with a back three, but he certainly wants to play in your half of the field. You wonder where Argentina are going to get the defensive pace from, because it's a style of play that does push the boat out. If you don't press well in midfield, you are very exposed to the opposition's counterattack. So that I think, is the big question mark over Argentina's World Cup campaign. Can their defence, asked to play high, can their defence cope with that?
Do you think you'd be able to get Dybala and Aguero and Messi and Di Maria? Do you think he'll be able to get these four, even Higuain as well? We forget he's not been involved as well. Do you think you'd be able to get, particularly those four, you'd think, as well, with the pace and power that they've got in the same starting 11?
Well, I think for me, the front three, the trident, now pick themselves. You want Di Maria close to Messi, as we saw yesterday. Not wide, but close to Messi, with license to roam. And for me, the centre forward is an absolute no-brainer. It's Aguero. Messi and Aguero go back years and years and years. They're old mates. They have a relationship. The great hidden statistic of this Argentina campaign is, in the 18 rounds, on only two occasions did Messi and Aguero start the game together. On both occasions, they won. I'm sure if you ask Messi, who do you want to play with at centre-forward, he will say Aguero. And then you've got some of the other options on the bench, because Sampaoli, I'm sure he's going to want his two wide men. So he's going to want that as a structure of the team, because that opens out the pitch, and that opens up space for your attacking trio to combine there. So as far as I'm concerned, that front three, that trident, picks itself now, which is Di Maria, Messi and Aguero. What doesn't yet pick itself is the rest of the side. But as we're saying, he's got time and he's got friendlies and he's got that calm now. They're over the line. He can think about that. And he doesn't anymore have the populist pressures. But Argentina, remember, all the best players are playing in Europe. There's always pressure to pick home-based players, because the fans know them and like them. So the centre-forward for the last couple of games has been Benedetto of Boca Juniors. Mm. Now he's a good player, in good form. But between him and Higuain and Aguero, you wouldn't have him. And now they don't have to play at home anymore. That's almost an advantage, because you're away from those populist players, those populist pressures. And he can now just concentrate on picking a team that works, that functions. And if he does that and the results follow, then he doesn't have to worry about the press, because they'll be behind him.
Tim, I know the big thing, of course, through this qualification was always around Argentina, particularly in the last few weeks. But the other one as well, it's obviously because it's not Argentina, but Chile. They got beat last night against Brazil. A word on them, Chile out of qualification, given what they've done the last couple of Copa Americas they've won themselves, out now of the World Cup, given what they've got, this hugely talented side that they've got, do we think that's now maybe the end? I did see that Arturo Vidal has come out and retired, I think, in the aftermath of all this as well, not qualifying. So how do we see Chile going then now over the next few years? Because if you're looking at Alexis Sanchez, I think he'll be 34 at the next World Cup. A lot of the talented players that's within them, they look now that this is almost the end of their international careers as well.
Yeah, it's the end of them for a while. If you look around the kind of lesser South American nations, very frequently it's been a case of one generation and out. You know, Peru had that in the 70s. Colombia had that late 80s, early 90s. Bolivia had that in 94 when they qualified. And then when that generation is gone, there are no natural replacements and you slip back. And it's almost guaranteed that that's going to happen to Chile. Now, Chile don't have a competitive game now until 2019. Mm. So by then, you know, even Sanchez is over 30. They're all over 30, all of them. It's time to build for the future. And the problem they have is that their youth sides are under 20, especially their under 20 side. They haven't been very good. So it's bad time, I think, to be a Chile fan, because you're in for a few lean years. I think I'm one of the few people who's not that surprised that they've fallen by the wayside. And that's because it is an aging team, and it's a model of play that they have that demands high intensity. It's constant movement, it's constant pressure, because if not, you are wide open to the opposing counterattack. And you can see over recent matches, the goals have just dried up. They took the entire first team to the Confederations Cup, which I thought was a big risk. Now, remember what it's been for Chile. They played the World Cup in 2014. They played a Copa America on home soil, which they won in 2015. An extra centenary Copa America in the United States, which they won in 2016. A Confederations Cup earlier this year, in mid-season. Then that means this generation of players, all of whom are around the 30 mark and some are over, they haven't had a holiday for years and years and years and years, and it takes it out of you. And all right, they reached the final of the Confederations Cup, but they only won one game along the way, and the goals really dried up. And in the last six games that they've played, two in the Confederations Cup and the last four World Cup qualifiers, in five of those games, they couldn't score a goal. So the warning signs have been flashing for a while. And I just think it's a case that this team have grown old together, and you look around with Chile and you can't see a lot of hope for renewal.
Tim, that's great stuff. Thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thank
you.
All
the best. We're back after the break with Robbie Savage.
Ashley Williams has it now. Closed out brilliantly by Hendrick, who's won the ball back in a good area. Can he keep it on the pitch? I think he has done. He's getting to the end line here. Jeff Hendrick gets the ball across. Arthur steps over. Breaks the McLean! Ireland ahead in the 57th minute. Brilliant industry from Hendrick. A great ball across. Arthur stepped over it, and it was rifled into the bottom corner by James McLean, and Ireland lead in Cardiff.
Come on! What a finish that was, on his right foot. And you with your right foot, you boys that can't use in the left foot. What a finish. Brilliant from Jeff Hendrick. Excellent little step over the near pulse from Harry Arter and James McLean to control it and then drill it past Wayne Hennessy. What a goal. Magic moment for the Irish fans too. Brilliant.
Oh yes, James, your 10th international goal. Could be one of the most precious of all. Got the winner in Vienna. Has he got the winner in Cardiff? Long way to go.
Oh, what a night that was. What a moment when James McLean struck that with his right foot into the back of the net. Great, great time. Great, great night. But I'm delighted now to be joined on the line by Robbie Savage. Robbie, it was a tough old night for Wales. I'm sure you probably agree with that. And in fairness to you, you did speak beforehand. You did say it would go 1-0 either way. Obviously, you were tipping up Wales, but you did say it would be a very, very tight game. And it turned out that way in the end for you.
Well, I said I didn't think there'd be many goals because Wales had kept three clean sheets in the previous three, winning all three. I thought 1-0 Wales. I thought the odd goal would, you know, be decisive, and it proved for Ireland. But, you know, as you were saying before the game as well, Kev, that Martin O'Neill, in the games, he needs to do something, and he does it. And all credit to him, he got his tactics right. And it was from the Welsh perspective, you know, they had one chance from Al Robson, Canu's header. Joe Allen going off was a huge blow in that first half. But I just thought that the goal, you know, for an experienced goalkeeper to roll the ball out to the captain, and then the captain in that situation, you know, it's 0-0. You need to win to get in that playoff place. And you can see, if you watch it back, Jeff Hendrick was actually pointing. He was ready. The trap was set. You know, so for the captain to want the ball in that situation, obviously, you know, the captain, that's how Wales play, you know, back from the back. But I just think in the circumstances of the game, what was it, 57th minute?
Yeah.
You know, it's 0-0. You've got to get the back four up the park. You know, Hennessy's got to kick it, you know, because the trap was set. And they've got to say, you know, there's a few, one pundit in Ireland who was probably questioned, should have Jeff Hendrick started the game beforehand, which was absolute nonsense, because if you look at his work rate, his energy, he created that goal all by himself. He pressed on his own. He won the ball and shown great determination and skill to keep the ball alive.
Mm.
And then the cutback and the strike from James McLean with his right foot was a sensational strike to get his foot over it and to smash in the corner. You know, all credit, and Wales didn't have any answers. So, you know, the 1-0 was decisive. And it was, the funny thing was, Kev, when it was 1-0, and I knew that only a Wales win would get that playoff spot. In the last, like, seconds of injury time, I was, you know, this might sound a bit funny, but I was hoping it wasn't a draw, because obviously Wales, I would love to have seen the playoffs, but if it had been a draw, neither side would have qualified. And, you know, I hope that Ireland now get to the World Cup, but a draw would have been disaster for both nations. So in the end, I'm glad there was a result one way.
Yeah, that would have actually been a killer come the end of the game. What do you think went wrong for Wales overall then? Do you think there's anything you could have done differently throughout?
Well, you know, it's all right after you know, talking after the game, but, you know, Chris Coleman, who am I to judge Chris Coleman what he's done with Wales?
Mm.
You know, he's had a terrific campaign. I'm not one of these pundits or ex-players who will judge a manager after, you know, in terms of what he could have done differently. But he trains with those players all week. He knows the strength and weakness of that squad. You know, Wales have used the least number of players in the whole qualifying campaign. They only used 21 players. So we had a settled team. Obviously, Gareth Bale was a huge blow. As, you know, Seamus Coleman not playing for Ireland was for Ireland.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not going to question Chris Coleman or his coaching staff's methods or tactics, because who am I to do that? What is achieved with Wales?
Was it, you mentioned Joe Allen earlier. Was that the turning point, do you think, in the game? As soon as Joe Allen went off and Ramsey coming a little bit deeper, do you think it was just down to that, or was there other maybe aspects throughout the game?
Well, I heard you say something. You can correct me if I'm wrong here, Kev, but I think it was an off-the-ball tweet that you didn't think it was Joe Allen, that you thought it was something that Roy Keane did. I didn't actually read the piece. What was that?
Well, do you know what it was, Robbie? I felt as though that, yes, Joe Allen was on the pitch. I think he was having an influence of starting the game. Aaron Ramsey, I feel as though, was having an influence. But what Ireland were doing as a back four, they were staying as a back four. So Hal Robson-Corner was occupying the two centre-halves, and both Stephen Ward and Cyrus Christie were just sat in alongside them without squeezing in on Tom Lawrence or Andy King. I felt as though by just staying as that back four, we were getting overrun in midfield, and it was becoming like at times a 6v4 or 7v5, and Wales were just playing round us. But When Joe Allen got injured, Roy Keane pulled Cyrus Christie to the side during that injury spell, during that injury break, and you could see him mouthing to Cyrus Christie, squeeze in, and there was some message that was made in that moment, as if Cyrus Christie was told then he needed to step in on Tom Lawrence at that far side of the pitch to stop that overload.
Yeah, you might keep into that there, but I just think basically the goal came from a mistake from Wales.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, the overload or Cyrus Christie pushing in or out didn't have no influence on that goal. It was basically, you know, the fact that, you know, it was great play from Jeff Hendrick. You know, Cyrus Christie could have been left back, right back, centre midfield, but the goal came from, you know, the persistence of Jeff Hendrick setting the trap, and from Wales, you know, just not reading the situation. And, you know, when Ashley Williams got the ball, he was, you know, we had a big discussion about Ashley before the game, didn't we? But you know, you preferred Duffy over Ashley Williams, and, you know, we disagreed. And, you know, it was Ashley Williams' mistake, really, that, you know, that cost Wales, you know, not saying the goal completely, because obviously Jeff Hendricks then got to keep the ball, and then he's got to whip it across. And as you said, I think in the commentary, Harry Hart has great step over. James McLean was unmarked. So you can see that when the two centre-half split for Wales and Ashley Williams got the ball in the left-back position, he's out of position straight away.
Mm.
So, you know, with McLean getting in the middle of the goal, where Ashley Williams probably might have been. So the goal from a Wales defensive point of view was all over the place and so disappointing. That goal could easily have been stopped if the captain says he can see the situation. Because what I can't get me around, Kev, is players of experience, and Ashley Williams is a better player than me. You know, he's a leader. What he's achieved at Wales is great. But on the TV, you can see Hendrick pointing.
Yeah,
give him the ball. And he gives him the ball, Hennessy. Hennessy's got to use his experience then. And that goal can easily be avoided. And you know, Kev, when we played, you know, consecutive errors, you know, our managers talk about that. And how much there was, Hennessy should never have threw the ball out. Ashley Williams' first touch was poor. Then it was a poor clearance. And then, you know, Wales out of position. There's so many errors in that goal in the short space of time. It could have easily been stopped. So I get what you're saying, Kim, about Cyrus Christie. But irrespective of whatever the tactics were when Joe Allen went off, that's irrelevant because it was 0-0, and it probably still would have been 0-0 without that goal.
Yeah, I mean,
it would have been 0-0 without the goal.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, we know you're not the brightest on that aspect there, Rob. But yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. It's these fine margins, these telling moments in the game that dictate football matches. We know that. But Chris Coleman was speaking on Sky afterwards. He said we pretty much dominated the first half. We knew Ireland would have a game plan and executed it very well. Fair play to them. But when we lost Joe Allen's creativity, we suffered, and that was the thing that with his influence on the game. And I felt in the first 25-30 minutes that Ireland were a little bit overran, I think, just particularly in the midfield at the part. And I just feel as though that Aaron Ramsey, with dropping deeper, I think the whole aspect of the game changed because of Ramsey having to play a little bit deeper to try to be or try and play that Joe Allen role, really.
Yeah, you're right, Kevin. You know, there was times in the game and situations where there were free kicks. You know, Aaron Ramsey had one near the end, you know, Gareth Bale territory. And there was times when, I think it was Tom Lawrence or Andy King picked the ball up. And that would be the times where you wouldn't bail on it, because we've seen him back to his nearly his best with Real Madrid in recent times, you know, with a goal against Borussia Dortmund. And you will miss the world-class player in those situations. So I think in that game, those are the moments you miss Gareth Bale to take your team up the park. That moment of magic. Ireland had injuries, so I'm not making excuses that Gareth Bale was out and missing, because Ireland lost, you know, two or three key players. I've seen them sit on the sidelines. You see, I don't know if John Walters was injured. Was he injured, Kev?
Yeah, he's out. He's out for 12 weeks.
He's done for Ireland. He's been brilliant for Ireland. You know, no Seamus Coleman, obviously. So, you know, no Shane Long. So you can say that, you know, there's three players there who probably get an Ireland starting lineup, possibly if fit. You know, and Wales only were missing one. I know he's a world class player and different to anything Ireland have got, but, you know, so those three players, well, Ireland were missing, so there's no excuses there.
Yeah, I mean,
you know what I mean? But if it's just on the night, Martin O'Neill got it brilliantly right. You know, when you look at the game itself, it was so tense. I've got to say, both sets of supporters are absolutely fantastic. The Irish fans behind the goal, the Welsh fans, the singing of the national anthem before the game, the Welsh national anthem. You were there, Kev.
Rob, I tell you what, it was...
Incredible.
It was nerve-jarring. Honestly, it was. The whole night was amazing, but the Welsh national anthem was one of the highlights I've that's ever happened to me since I've certainly come on the other side and started to commentate. Listening
but
to that,
Kev, you know, I was in Ireland, and you know, I was in Ireland, you know, a few weeks before, and then like a media round table.
Yeah, I saw you. Yeah, you'd spoken to Nathan through that, hadn't you? Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, seeing how much criticism there was for Martin O'Neill beforehand, and you know, I think you know, Nathan will tell you that I was very supportive of Martin O'Neill and saying that, you know, that clip's been played now. How many Ireland players are getting the Welsh side? And, you know, Martin O'Neill, they were hammering for getting a draw in Georgia. You know, that draw, how important was that draw in Georgia?
Now? I know.
You know, I believe he's still getting a bit of stick off a few people, which is absolute nonsense. This is why I don't get, Kevin, that, you know, we can all have a view and an opinion because, you know, whether you've played the game or not. But to hammer people when they're with this team all the time. So, you know, Chris Coleman now, you know, saying what could he have done different? Nothing different because, as I've said, he's worked with those players. But for Martin O'Neill to get the criticism he did, and that point now for Ireland and Georgia, that point now is huge. And he followed that up with a win against Moldova, 2-0, and then goes to the Cardiff City Stadium, wins. What more can the guy do? So
I wanted to bring that up. I mean, I heard when you were talking to Nathan about the negativity towards Martin O'Neill when you were over here that time, and you've constantly spoke yourself about the impact he had on your career and of course the job now he's doing for Ireland. But one thing, Robbie, how does he make the difference? Because there's been a constant thing over here in relation to the two O'Neills, actually. Michael O'Neill with Northern Ireland, with the job he's done and how he sets his side up, how organised he is. And there's a perception here that it's almost as if Martin O'Neill does nothing, which it's crazy to think at times. It's madness when you think about it. It's almost people are suggesting it's luck that's got him into the position. But I want to say to you, Robbie, yourself, from dealing with him and being around him, how does he actually make the difference in players' mindset? Because Craig Bellamy actually spoke about this on Sky the other night as well. He was talking about he doesn't really see anything within the Ireland side that's going to hurt Wales. But with a Martin O'Neill side, you always know that something can happen. And invariably, obviously, of course, it did happen. But so how does he make a difference to the players themselves?
Well, what he'll do, what he'll have done before that game, he'd have probably, I don't know what he'd done with Ireland, but I might have time at Leicester City. Obviously, you know, his time on the training ground when he was a manager of me at Leicester City was, you know, it would be an impact situation where maybe 10, 15 minutes to go before the end of the training, he would come out and, you know, just the authority that, you know, the aura he had, and, you know, people would up there training 5-10% when the manager walked out. And I'm sure he's on the training a lot more because he's with the players less period of time with international duty, obviously.
Do you think that's more of a bearing than to have a manager like Martin O'Neill because he doesn't have as much time in the training ground with them?
Well, possibly. I've worked with managers who do everything. I've had managers who don't do as much. It's just the managers, you know, preferences. But I've seen Steve Walford sitting there. Steve Walford's a fantastic coach.
Yeah.
Steve Walford can relay the manager's ideas perfectly to the players because, you know, they know exactly what one another are doing. Roy Keane obviously have an influence. But, you know, I'm sure before the game, he'd have had a plan. You know, I'm not sure who'd have been, you know, that tactical. He'd have been saying to the individuals, which he knows, do what you're good at. Then he simplifies the game and he makes you feel 10 foot tall if you've won, you know, and he'll put an arm around you if you lose. But if you lose, he'll have a right go at you. So, his management skills is fantastic. Look, people talk about luck, absolute nonsense.
But Robert, just one point I wanted to ask you just about Chris Coleman. You touched on him before as well. Chris Coleman's position, I think his contract's up at the end of November. Where does Chris Coleman go from here then? Does he stay on? I know there's a lot of players, Gareth Bale and a lot of the other players, Chris Gunter, come out saying he's the greatest Welsh manager of all time. But where do you think he goes from here now? Do you think he'll stay on? Do you, if he were to leave, is there any options available to him in your mind?
Well, first and foremost, you can see how devastated Chris was, you know, not to, you know, get Wales into the playoffs and hopefully into the World Cup first time since 1958. You know, people are saying, you know, one tournament wonder were Wales, but let's not forget what they achieved. They were something like 80th in the world when he took over. They got as high as 8th, they're now 13th. He's instilled a belief in Welsh football once again. You know, when he took over, they were getting 6,000 crowds. You know, they could have filled the Millennium on that night. Oh, sorry, the Principality as it is now. It was 33,000 there. So the joy of football as a Welsh fan is there. He's give fans nights they'll never forget, a tournament they'll never forget. And, you know, I'm sure he would have loved to have seen Wales in a World Cup. But where does he go from here? Obviously, I'd love to see him stay as Wales manager because he's been brilliant. I'm sure the players do because the mentality he's created with a group of players is unbelievable. They all love playing for him. They all enjoy meeting up. They all enjoy pulling on that red shirt. But, you know, the worry would be now that, you know, for Chris, because he's done so well and his stock is still very high, you know, very high, if he is to lead Wales in another campaign, it doesn't go well, you know, where does that leave him? You know, for me, I'm right saying his contract's up in the summer. I think that, you know, it depends what he wants. Has he enjoyed the international scene or would he like to get back into the day-to-day running of a football club? I know he's a passionate guy. I know he works hard. His work ethic's brilliant. He's got a good team around him in Kit Simons and, you know, other members of staff. So I think that as much as I'd love to see him, you know, carry on with Wales, and I think there'll be an offer from Wales if there isn't already. But I just think that it might be the time to go and try your hand again in club management. You know, he's managed Coventry. He went to Greece and managed Larissa. He had a time at Fulham. So I think there will be opportunities for him because of what he's achieved with Wales. And, you know, I'm not having the fact that he hasn't qualified. That makes him a bad manager. You know, he has been brilliant for Wales. And, you know, I think that with the contract up in the summer, you know, I think that his stock is really high. Probably going to be a club manager once again. You know, would be great for Chris. And I'd love to see him in management in one form or the other.
Robbie, brilliant stuff tonight. I really appreciate you taking the call today, mate.
No,
thanks very much. Take it easy.
Off the ball on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.